Hello, my friends. It's me, Bethany Rutter, and I'm here with my good friend and business partner.
It's me, Ada Slater.
Now you can drink your water. Get it down, you. We are back with another episode of What Page Are You On? Once again, coming to you from Clean Prose, the co-working space for writers, where they also do cool workshops and events and things like that.
Check them out at clean_prose on twitter.com.
That is them. And this is us. Alice, how would you describe the kind of theme of today's episode?
Sleepy bitches.
Yeah, sleepy bitches indeed. Or like hibernate-y bitches.
Like the great millennial novel.
Yeah, in many ways, yes. So the two books that we thought went together quite well that have come out in the last kind of 18 months or so are My Year of Rest and Relaxation by Atessa Moshfegh and The New Me by Halle Butler. Tell me about them.
Where should we start? We'll start with Atessa.
Yes.
Because that one's a little bit older. My Year of Rest and Relaxation is set in New York in the year 2000 to 2001. It is about an unnamed narrator who basically like opts out for a year.
She just decides that she doesn't want to participate in life and she wants to have basically a medically induced hibernation.
She refers to it as her year of rest and relaxation multiple times.
Yeah.
I can't remember, she has inheritance, doesn't she?
Yes.
She has loads of money in the bank. She's young and kind of nihilistic and just decides, fuck it.
I'm out. I have nothing to live for, really. I've got nothing going on.
What did you think of this book?
I actually liked it a lot more than I thought I was going to.
I fucking loved
it. Yeah. I think, because I know that Atessa Moshfegh is so, like, spiky as a person, I think I do kind of go into her stuff expecting, like, to be made quite unhappy and uncomfortable by it. And I go in expecting, like, a lot of quite banal, like, cool girl fat phobia stuff. And yeah. I don't know, like, all the stuff I don't like. And yet, in spite of all that, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was, like, a cool conceit. I thought it was a very like compelling idea,
considering that actually it kind of sounds boring.
Yeah,
like I can't describe to you how boring you know, like I actually find the concept, but it's just so compelling.
Yeah,
the world that she creates is just so kind of low-key vile.
Yeah,
but her writing is just so incredibly vivid.
It's I think so that's vivid. The thing, I think she can pull it off. She is like a very capable writer and she can pull off an idea that many people probably couldn't.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's like she knows where to what details to write around.
Yeah, you know? What is a rich seam?
Like there's this moment in this book, so I read My Year of Rest and Relaxation on my honeymoon last month in Japan, and we didn't have much to do when we first landed. We were, like, stranded in Beijing because of a typhoon, so I just read constantly for, like, 3 days. And I think, like, I got really into the world of this book. Like, I was in there, maybe, like, I was in there too deeply.
Yeah, because you could relate to it because you was, like, stuck inside.
Yeah.
You couldn't really go out anywhere.
Although I just realised as I'm saying this, I think I actually read this in one go on a train. I don't think I was stuck in the hotel room at all. Anyway, it doesn't matter. There's this scene. So she goes to her local bodega and buys coffee every day, which I in itself find utterly bizarre because I don't feel like in the UK we have the
same. We do not have that culture.
Yeah, we don't. Obviously, we have a cafe culture, but we don't rely on buying hot coffee from
the corner shop.
The corner store. No. Like, we would just make it at home. But this, like, ritual of going out to buy coffee is essential to her. She has to have that coffee. And there's this scene where she's really desperate for coffee and she realizes after she's poured in her creamer that the cream was off, and she takes a mouthful of coffee and she describes it as like these kind of curds hitting her teeth, and she doesn't even care. She still just downs the coffee. That was so vivid to me that I dreamed that night. That I was drinking
bad coffee.
Yeah.
She got in your brain.
She got well in. She was right in there, in the grey stuff.
And I feel like there are things from Eileen that I still kind of remember like that. She just is this kind of incredibly, I don't know, what is it about her? What is it about Atessa Moshfegh?
I think it's just that she writes with such precision.
Yeah, she's very smart. And that sometimes comes out as, like, meanness. And that's what you're always kind of fighting with her.
And I think that's the thing, isn't it? Like, one, I remember, so Eileen was my book of the year I read it. I just loved it so much. And
as
then
many
remember,
people of our demographic did.
Yeah, we all fucking loved it. And then I remember that Atessa Mushfeg then did this interview where she kind of slammed on crime writing.
Well, she said, I wrote Eileen to prove to myself how easy it was to write a thriller, was basically what she said. Yeah. Like, yeah.
And, you know, I just think that's such an obvious dickhead thing to say. Like, of course it's going to piss people off. And, like, being so kind of dismissive of her own work, you know? Like, I don't believe for 1 second that it was an easy book that she just knocked out.
Yeah.
Like, fuck off. I don't believe that. And I remember it really pissed me off. I felt very riled up for fucking ages about it. But I don't know.
She can bring the goods.
Yeah, I feel like once you accept that someone's a fucking arsehole.
Yeah.
And maybe she's not. Maybe that is all just a persona that she likes to put on.
It's just an annoying persona because it is kind of common. Like, you know, like the stupid Lucy Ellman who wrote Ducks Newburyport. You know, like, she loves talking about how stupid crime fiction is.
Does she?
Yeah, she's another one of those dickheads, yeah.
Oh my god, I did not know that. She has me blocked on Twitter and I don't know
for
why.
For reasons we will never know. I would literally, like, I'm not even exaggerating, I would pay money to know why she blocked you.
I don't know.
Because you've never spoken.
I didn't know who she was. I'd never heard of her until her book came out.
And now we'll never hear of her again. Because as we know, if you don't win the Booker, you are forgotten about in
this,
no time at
this
all.
This is like the meanest that we have ever been on the pod.
We've been infected by the spirit of Atessa Mushfeg. That's literally what's happening right now. We have been infected by the spirit of Atessa.
It's true.
But yeah, I I really liked it. I found it very, just really absorbing.
What did you think, no spoilers, of the ending?
I know what you mean by the ending. Yeah. I was into it. I don't know, because... As in, like, the event that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it was... I don't know. On the one hand, I'm like, it had to have been... Is that why it was set then? But then also, on the other hand, I think it does work very well being set at that time because it was kind of the last... Maybe, like, the last period where you could kind of, for various reasons, like, opt out of life. Like... kind of pre all invasive technology, maybe like political disengagement, maybe like things weren't that important. Like, I don't know. What do you think?
I mean, I guess it feels like it's like the end of the nihilism of the 90s.
Yeah.
You know, like, I guess this character and this world and this book would make less sense to me if it was set in 2011.
Yeah.
And you're right. I think part of it is, like, the all-encompassing technology that...
You can't opt out of life anymore because life is...
But people do. But, yeah. Like, I think that in itself is the...
That would be the story.
Yeah, like...
would be opting out of technology rather than opting out of life.
And, like, when you do meet a young person or even, like, a millennial who doesn't have any social media whatsoever... It lives a very different lifestyle to the rest of us.
Yeah.
Like, it's just a whole different thing.
So then the question... Yeah. I don't know.
Because then I'm just thinking about, like, the people in her life. Like, so she has a best friend called Reva, who basically is a glorified drinking buddy. Even though the main character doesn't really drink, Reva kind of uses her as a vehicle for her own drinking. Which is the same as the relationship between the two female friends in the other book we are going to discuss, The New Me. But Reva doesn't, like, call her in advance. Reva just turns up, like, whether she's asleep or whatever. Like, they don't have any kind of preamble. I feel like that wouldn't feel as natural now.
Yeah, that would be weird. You'd be like, who is this invasive
Why are
presence?
You always in my fucking house? And even though in some ways, like, the narrator does feel that way.
And Reva is kind of annoying.
Yeah,
but she's kind of
she's
in a way, like, more sympathetic than the unnamed narrator because you understand her more. I don't know.
Yeah.
I feel like she's more of a person that you could know than this, like, weird hermit.
I just mean that, like, I think in the year 2000, 2001, not having a clear channel of communication
to announce
to you
your presence,
all the time,
yeah,
you probably would just. Try your luck and knock on your pal's door if you're in the neighborhood.
Yeah. And what do you think? You like the ending?
I thought it was really fucking bold.
Yeah.
I thought it was really bold. I thought the last line took my breath away. I'm not sure it's an advisable ending.
Yeah.
Do you remember it?
No, because I read it ages ago.
I'm going to read the last line out loud. Okay. Because it's not a spoiler. Until you understand what's happening. There she is, a human being, diving into the unknown, and she is wide awake. I mean, it's fucking beautiful, but my God.
It's a bold choice, yeah.
It's a bold choice. I would be very interested to know how it's been received. I haven't looked into it too deeply, but I suspect that it's probably quite polarizing. I'm sure that some people really don't like it.
Yeah.
Maybe
Americans.
That's kind of what I'm thinking.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, I think it's a really, like, interesting choice. And I feel like it's one that doesn't get made that often in art. Yeah. It's a thing that has been steered clear from.
You know who I loved, changing the subject? I really loved her mad...
therapist.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and, like, in the last episode, we talked about the Staunch Prize and how it kind of misrepresents, like, the reality of violence against women. I feel like fiction broadly, like, madly misrepresents the behavior of therapists. I think more than any other group, I think therapists really should form some kind of union and, like, take down everything that makes them all look just completely insane.
Is this appropriate language to be using?
No. But it is, you know, that is how they always come across in fiction.
The thing with this therapist, Dr. Tuttle is her name.
Yes.
Is you get the vibe that she will... And the reason why the narrator keeps going to her is that she doesn't give a fuck.
She will prescribe...
She has no memory of any conversation they've had before. So she can say anything and the doctor's like, yeah, I get you. What we'll do, I'll prescribe you the good stuff. And every time she sees her, she has something stronger and better until she ends up on some experimental shit that kind of facilitates the rest of the book. But I just loved this relationship of this unpredictable, kind of ridiculous. And it kind of shows you as well, like, you know, this... It feels like a kind of a critique on a lack of healthcare.
Yeah.
You know, like, this therapist doesn't give a fuck and will prescribe her whatever she wants, essentially. Which is a scary position to be in. Like, you know, obviously big pharma and, you know, medicine is an industry. But when you have your medical professionals have a financial gain in prescribing stuff...
It's a dark dynamic.
Yeah, it doesn't feel ethical.
True. I guess. Yeah. Tell you the other book that it slightly reminded me of. And obviously, maybe, yeah, would be nice to bring it up, was Problems by Jade Sharma, who since we last recorded an episode has died, which is incredibly sad. Yeah. So yeah, that was like the other, and that's got a kind of medical element. I don't know. Yeah. They seem to
be, yeah, I think they're good.
Be coexisting harmonious books for me. Yeah.
On the whole, I wish that I had picked this up earlier. I think because I was still mad at Ottessa Moshfegh for...
being such a dick.
Yeah. For being an antagonist.
Yeah.
I bought it almost immediately and then I let it languish on my shelves for over a year. I wish I picked it up sooner because I really vibed with it.
Yeah.
I do kind of love these, like, incredibly unlikable female narrators.
I think when they're done by someone who is smart, that's cool.
Yeah. And I don't feel like... I'm not reading to have friends. I don't mind reading characters that I don't like.
Yeah.
And I do feel like quite often books are criticised for being... centering around unlikable people.
Yeah.
But so often I feel like that's quite gendered.
Yeah.
I feel like
yeah.
people are more turned off by unlikable female narrators than male.
Of course, yeah.
Like, no one criticises... again, a boy, B.E.E. No one criticises his narrators for being unlikable. You know, like... I think that we instantly vibe and understand.
Yeah, we understand the ways in which men are unlikable. Yeah. And we just will not sympathise with the ways in which women can be unlikable. Yeah. And I think, I don't know, over the last, like, couple of weeks or whatever, I read a book that I didn't think was particularly good, and then I saw a play that I didn't think was particularly good, and I think it was because I found them so predictable, and they did like nothing new and nothing interesting, and like people liked the book, and people reviewed the play well, and they were, you know, had like female protagonists and whatever. I don't know. I think in my old age, I just want to be kind of surprised, and I want to see something new and weird and different, and whether or not that's about like likability, I think is kind of irrelevant. I think more than anything, I just want something that is like doing something new and interesting. And that is exactly what my year of rest and relaxation does. It's like, it's a concept that is interesting to me, and it's executed in a way that I find interesting and I didn't find predictable.
Agreed. There's no possible way to guess where this book is going, to be perfectly honest. And like,
even and it was the same with Eileen.
100%. Yeah. Exactly. 100%. And I think even though it has like a very satisfying feeling of inevitability about the plot,
yeah,
you still couldn't guess from the very beginning exactly where it's going to go. And I'm not talking about the very, very end that we've already discussed. I mean the kind of...
the way that her condition plays out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. You're right. I want to be surprised. I don't really care like whether or not I like the main character. Like, The Secret History is one of my favourite books. I don't fucking like any of them. They're all horrible. They're all horrible boring. People.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're horrible. But again, like, I'm not looking for people to invite to my birthday party when I'm reading novels. Yeah. Like, I'm reading fictional characters. I want to believe in them. I want them to feel real. And that means sometimes they're going to suck, because a lot of people do, you know.
Yeah. How about our next book?
The New Me.
By Hallie Butler. So The New Me, I read more recently. So I will tell you what it's about. And it's about a young lady called Millie, who is a kind of temp at a furniture, or like an interior design studio. And it basically, the whole book is about like her, she's a bit of a like non-person. Like, she doesn't really do anything. And she has this one friend called Sarah, who is, again, a glorified drinking buddy. But more explicitly in this, I think. They explicitly are drinking buddies. And she is a temp from a temp agency. And she is not sort of doing particularly well in her job, but somehow becomes fixated on the idea that she is going to get made permanent and get a promotion. And that's kind of what the...
That's it.
That's basically
that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah, which is such a weird thing because it sounds like so boring, but it's so not boring.
It is so good. I absolutely love this book. And I felt like when I read it, I was on a bit of a... like a bit of a reading slump. Mm. I was giving up
on
all books.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This was your bad period.
Yeah, I was struggling, man. I was just struggling. I feel like everything I picked up wasn't landing right with me, and I was just not having a good time. And it completely breathed life into me. I read it in one evening. It absolutely banged.
Yeah, it really did. And it's almost like, I'd say this is in the middle of the Venn diagram between my year of rest and relaxation mm-hmm. and Convenience Store Woman.
Yes.
I just think they work, they are so, it's the middle. It's exactly those two smushed together.
And because there's something about Millie that is so relatable, even though also she's quite extreme in her position. But like, you know, she's that kind of typical lost 20-something-year-old who has a job that she's just shit at. She has no idea how to be better at her job. She has no idea how to make friends or even have a better relationship with the friend that she does have. Like, she kind of doesn't quite acknowledge the reality of the situation that she's in any of the situations that she's in.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's something very appealing about that.
Also, like, life is happening to her. She is not happening to life.
Yeah, she is so passive.
Yeah.
And when she tries to break that role, when she tries to be more proactive, she fucks it incredibly. Like, she just gets it so wrong.
Yeah, and so there's, like, this one little thing in the book that I'm just like, I don't understand. So she's asked to do this one task, and she just doesn't do it. You know, like, the shredding.
Yeah.
Why doesn't she do it?
Oh, man. I mean, I feel like it's because she genuinely isn't very good at her job. She doesn't care. And doesn't she take something from the pile? She, like, steals an email that's meant to be shredded.
Yeah.
Again, like, because she just doesn't think it matters.
She's inexplicable. But one of the things I really liked about the new me was I thought Millie as a character and Millie's, like, voice and look on the world was so compelling. But I also loved the little bits where you see the people around her. So you see, like, a girl from her office, like, the world from the point of view of a girl from her office and, like, her neighbours. I just thought those were also very, like, convincing.
Yeah, I totally forgot about that. But you're right, we do get some other perspectives as well.
They're not, like, you know, they're often not kind of earth-shattering observations, but they just work really well. It's also useful in that respect because you know that she's not going to get this promotion. And if anything, she is going to be terminated because you have had a chapter from the point of view of, like, her line manager. And it also, that kind of, it's never a surprise when things don't go her way because you can't really be part of her delusion about her situation.
No, which because is you why see stuff from it works so well.
Yeah, I agree.
There's a lot of kind of low-key dramatic tension when she's talking about her promotion, and you know that her line manager is, like, basically setting her up to fail. Line manager is, and oh, it sounds like it's like kind of the awful thing about employment is that ultimately, because we have good employment laws, obviously they could always be better, but because we have employment laws, you can't just sack someone because they piss you off. So, you know, to me that felt very realistic of, like, basically watching someone like a hawk waiting for them to slip up so you have something you can write down in your little journal. I also loved then having another perspective of that dynamic again, which was someone above the line manager, and the line manager couldn't give two shits. It became very apparent that this woman, sorry, the line manager, was almost going way too hard in trying to get rid of this, get rid of Millie.
Because it gave her something to do. Because she has, like, no agency in her own job. Because she has, like, her job fundamentally doesn't matter either. So she was, like, giving herself a sense of purpose by, like, over-managing this temp. Yeah.
That no one gave a fuck about. Yeah. I enjoyed that.
Me too, the pettiness of it.
Because it's such a shit way to treat someone.
Yeah.
You know? Even though Millie was, you know, shit at her job.
Whomst amongst us are not.
Yes. Exactly.
Yeah.
Oh, fuck. I loved it.
Yeah. And so is this Hallie Butler's first book?
I believe so.
I'd definitely read more of her.
No, sorry. It's not her first book. I did literally just discover she has another book that was also set in an office.
Interesting.
I'm not sure whether or not it's come out in the UK.
Okay, so maybe that's why this is appearing as a debut.
But I remember making a mental note literally right before we started recording where I was like, I'm going to pick that up.
Cool. No, I really liked it. And it's just like, you know, it's kind of managed. It's contained in a way that my year of rest and relaxation doesn't feel contained. That's quite a, like, sprawling book in a way. Even though it's all, like, set in quite a short or like a small geographic area, there is something about it that feels a bit more like uncontained, whereas psychologically I think the new me is very much like it's in her office or it's in her home. I liked that.
I love the scene when she goes to visit her parents and her parents are really rich and just kind of sums up how she is allowed to fail. You know, like, ultimately, even when she's on the brink of losing her job, she's not going to lose her flat. She's not going to be...
It's low stakes.
Yeah, it's so low stakes. And I think that she's saying something kind of interesting and important there. That, like, it shouldn't be... She shouldn't be in that position anyway, in terms of her job. But the fact that actually for her, it doesn't fucking matter. Like, you know, she goes to visit her mom who... I feel like, does she lie about her mom a lot? Does she pretend her parents are dead or...
I don't remember that.
Or maybe she just treats them with such kind of indifference that you assume that there's something, like,
weird or untoward. Like, yeah.
Like, maybe they're neglectful or abusive. But her mom is just, like, really happy to see her, buys her loads of new pants.
Go to mall. Yeah.
Yeah, like, she buys her a new winter coat. And, like, it's almost the kind of experience you'd have with your mom when you're, like, 12 years old, you know? Like, that she's so kind of coddled and arrested in so many ways, it's kind of not surprising that she has so little agency.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. She doesn't have to. She just has to turn up and someone will look after her. Someone will wipe her face and wash her tights.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. It felt really, like, messy and interesting in lots of ways.
And at the same time, I can understand why some people would not vibe with this kind of book, because they are basically books about extreme privilege.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that that's, you know, for many people, that is not going to be the one. I think it's just the messiness, the grossness that I enjoy. I just like books that about women being kind of gross.
Yeah.
And I feel like in The New Me, you can, like, smell her tights through the page.
Well, that's one of the chapters, is her neighbor who almost, she moves so little. She's so sedentary when she's in her flat that don't her neighbors think that that flat is, like, unoccupied or something? And yet it smells of cigarettes a lot. So they, I don't know, maybe I'm remembering it wrong, but they assume that there's no one there or that the person is dead or something. I don't know, there's a reason that you see a chapter from the point of view of her neighbors. Yeah, she's a gross little beast.
Or isn't it, like, the only sign of life is that she drops a bag of garbage outside her front door. And they're just like, who the fuck does that?
Yeah,
why are
yeah.
you leaving it on your doorstep?
We have neighbours that do that, and I hate them.
See, I used to have neighbours that did that, but I was kind of chill with it because they had a newborn baby.
Yeah, that's legit.
I was like, what else are you going to do?
What else are you going
to do? But only until I discovered that fact, I found it really annoying.
Yeah, agree.
It's amazing what you'll forgive, though, you know?
So true. but yeah, I think this is a banger, and I think that our listeners would enjoy it.
And I feel like, I don't know, this is definitely going to be a kind of literary trope of the 2010s with these books about, like,
malaise.
Yeah, malaise, gross, nihilistic women. Not that Eileen was like that, though, really. I think it was just the vibe, that noir vibe.
Yeah.
It kind of had. Like, women who are a little lost.
And that's kind of, I feel like In the Cut is very noirish.
Oh, fuck
as we discussed last week.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why it's been reissued now. Maybe it, like, chimes with a moment. Even though, like, Franny from In the Cut is not similar to these women in any way. But there is
she's
just...
She's not, but there are some things in common. Like, she's very independent.
Yeah.
She's very cut off, you know? Like, she's very solitary. She gets most of her contact from people from whom she gets very minimal comfort from.
Mm.
Like, the primary relationships that she has is her best pal, who she doesn't even see that often. Like, they mostly hang out in the bar below her friend's flat. And does Franny drink quite heavily?
Maybe. It's not such a thing,
no.
But so yeah. Lady Noir. I'd like more of that.
Me too, 100%. And there probably is more of it, but I do find it really hard to recognize these books, like, in the wild.
So
like,
true.
Like, if you lined these three novels up, because we recorded In the Cut today as well, so we have it with us, they look so different. Like, My Year of Rest and Relaxation has a painting on the front. Like, The New Me is an extreme close-up of a blonde woman with a fly on her forehead, or, like, somewhere on the cover. And then In the Cut has, like, a kind of very cool cutout kind of... I don't know if this is the final cover, actually.
I think it's quite similar to the final cover.
But, you know, they look very different. And I suppose, like, In the Cut, obviously, is more of a straight-up noir.
Mm.
Well, it's not really straight-up noir at all. Like, it's very different, but, yeah.
No, I don't know. I feel like it is, in terms of the kind of dark city, prowling, unknowable... I don't know.
The streets were dark with more than night.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe
that's
you should
a Raymond
write a
Chandler quote.
Oh, damn.
Maybe it's Raymond Chandler. One of my favorite lines, though. I love it.
Since we last recorded, I had such a good time reading Double Indemnity by James M. Cain, which is an incredibly good film, and I'd never read the book, and just from, like, page one, you're like, yeah, fucking loving life, like, absolutely loving life.
The movie has that incredibly iconic, is that the blonde Bob with the black sunglasses and the trench coat?
Maybe.
Doesn't someone disguise herself in, that's her disguise?
Maybe.
Which now I feel is, like, the quintessential lady in a noir disguise, but that's where it, like, came from.
Yeah, the genesis.
Yeah.
but yeah, I would definitely like, and in lots of ways, I would say, like My Sister the Serial Killer by Eoin Braithwaite is maybe a kind of modern noir.
Interesting, yeah. I mean, yeah, that's really interesting. I feel like that book was often described more for its satirical aspects than its like noir slash crime stuff, but I completely agree.
I also think that it's kind of a, for me, like noir as opposed to thrillers is more about kind of proximity to violence rather than being like involved in the violence. Like, yeah, I don't know, yeah. Just some, you're like up close against it, but you don't necessarily know everything that's going on.
I mean, what is the definition of noir?
I don't know, and we're not going to find out.
She's giving me a look that says, don't fucking Google it. No one cares.
No, I think people do care, but I also just feel like it's probably going to be one of those terms that doesn't have, like, a clear definition. Go on. Go on. Do it.
Oh, this is so good. So, a genre of crime film or fiction characterized by cynicism, fatalism, and moral ambiguity.
Interesting.
That interests me a lot. That is what I'm into.
But it's also very, like, it could be lots of different things. You know what I mean? That isn't, like, a, you know, like, the definition of, like...
Oh, yeah, I mean, this is just one dictionary's definition of it.
I like that it's quite open. So, yeah, I feel like My Sister the Serial Killer would fit into that.
Agreed.
Do you have anything you'd like to add about these two books or, like, other books that you feel would go well with them?
No, I feel like I wish that I could offer more,
comparators.
Yeah, books this reading list. I mean, I feel that your convenience store woman as adjacent, you know, like if you remove the noir aspects but kept kind of the spirit of the kind of work environment, that works for me. And that also made me think of a book that I didn't love but was very beloved.
Describe it to me.
Convenience store woman but flabby.
Oh, Miss Ice Cream Sandwich? No.
No.
Oh, like, sorry, I thought you meant, like, another...
No, Eleanor Oliphant is completely fine.
Yeah.
You see what I mean? Like, yeah, I just wear convenience store woman is, like, super concise.
Yeah.
Eleanor Oliphant is a very long book, and...
It's not very good.
Has a lot in that it doesn't need.
Yep.
I thought, the thing is that, I mean, I know, this is old news, we've talked about it before, but I found it so compelling... Even though at first I was quite turned off by the kind of, I don't know, woman existing in the world of womanhood and not quite understanding it all. That didn't like vibe with me. I didn't find it funny in the way that I think it was supposed to be funny. I got really sucked in by the character. And, you know, I guess that in spirit is what I'm going for.
Yeah.
But for me, that one just missed the mark a little bit. It was too long. The ending was
absurd.
Didn't hit the right note for me. Yeah, that's all she has to say about that.
Yeah. No, I feel like these two are conspicuous in how well they go together because they don't go super well with anything else.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. But and again, I feel like they will be polarizing. I'm sure that lots of people listening, if you've read one and hated it, you're not going to like the other.
Yeah, don't worry. Maybe you're right. Yeah.
Don't try it.
But the thing I will say is how many people have read My Year of Rest and Relaxation and prefaced their tweets about it with, like, I didn't expect to like this. Which is very interesting.
Whereas I feel like the new me is landing differently, and I wonder if that's because the reputations of the authors are so different.
Yeah, or we don't know enough about Hallie Butler to have decided what the book is going to be like.
Exactly, like, there's no kind of preconceptions.
Yes.
And, you know, it's a very short bang, you know? Yeah. Like, you're not losing hours of time your life to it.
Well, I've enjoyed this chat. Have you enjoyed this chat too?
Yeah, I've had a lovely time.
So again, I will say we are at Clean Pros. They're not paying us to do this, but we will just shout them out because they've been so very kind. They are on the internet at clean_pros.
That's it.
We are on the internet at WhatPagePod on Twitter and Instagram. You know where me and Alice are on the internet. We're there all the time. You know where to find us. And we'll see you on the flip side.
Catch you later. Bye.